me, I think non-monogamy emerged as a part of my queerness, because while I have been more naturally like attracted to like cis men, I think coming into my queerness and being non-monogamous gave me the opportunity to engage with people of different gender identities. And so it almost felt like an extension of my queerness.
Welcome to Normalizing Non-Monogamy, the podcast where we interview incredible people from all over the world to hear their personal journeys of self-discovery through the lenses of love, sex, and relationships.
Our mission is to show people that they're not alone and to inspire them to embrace their true selves so that together we can open minds and live authentically without shame.
We believe everyone's story is powerful and beautiful, yet it's important to remember that everyone does life a little bit differently and that the views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect our own.
Additionally, we aren't doctors. Please consult a medical professional for anything regarding your health that you might learn about on the show. Enjoy!
Welcome to episode 331. We're Finn and Emma, and today we have a wonderful conversation with Nikita. Nikita is a sex therapist and psychotherapist in New York City and is currently practicing solo polyamory, and she walks us through her incredible journey and how she got to where she is today.
Yeah, a few years back, she kind of dove into the play and kink scene in New York City, which sort of then opened up her world to the sort of greater explorations of non-monogamy. And we have a wonderful, wonderful conversation about sort of her journey exploring the world of non-monogamy as a solo person and sort of what her, you know, maybe her vision is for that in the future and also what that's looked like over the last few years. And so a huge amount of gratitude to Nikita for coming on and sharing your story and for the beautiful conversation and reflections on sort of what this impact and what how this has impacted your life and your sexuality and coming out and all of the things. Just amazing conversation, Emma.
Yes, yes, amazing. A quick reminder that links to all of Nikita's work are listed in the podcast show notes. And Nikita will also talk further about this in the episode, but she is presenting at the Herpes Stigma Virtual Conference on May 23rd of this year. Tickets are on sale now. This conference is hosted by Something Positive for Positive People, which is a 501c3 formed by Courtney Brain. And we talked to Courtney back on episode 326. So we highly, highly encourage you to check this out. Again, links are in the show notes.
Yeah, and definitely go back and listen to Courtney's episodes. Amazing conversations as well. And super excited to team up here with Nikita. And we have an episode coming in a few weeks with Dr. Dacker, which will sort of build on this a little bit more. And she's also presenting at the conference.
Yes.
All right. With that, we are going to jump into the interview right now for anybody who is a premium subscriber. And for the rest of you, we have some of our world famous announcements dished up hot for you right now.
Aren't you lucky?
You are lucky.
What's first?
First up is an appetizer. We talk about the premium subscription. You can find out more about the premium subscription on our homepage at normalizingnonmonogamy.com. You scroll down to the bottom there. You can sign up for $4 a month, and that lets you skip all of these world-famous announcements up front.
Yes, but don't worry, you still get important dates in the outro.
Exactly. Next up on the menu, Emma?
The virtual meet and greet. We just had a virtual meet and greet last week. It was incredible. We had such a fun time with the group of people that showed up. And don't worry, we're going to have another one. It's going to be on April 11th. So sign up now, secure your spot, and join us. These are open to anyone. You just must be open-minded and respectful. And they're a great way that are informal and really fun to meet like-minded people and have good time chatting with everybody.
Yeah. So to sign up, you can find out more on our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com. You click on the events tab or on the banner tab, just the banner.
Just the banner at the top of the page.
Just the banner at the top. One important note about the virtual meet and greet. This is a limited time offer, I will say, because we are going to take the summer off this year. So
from the virtual meet and greets.
From the virtual meet and greets. Yes. Just from the virtual meet and greets. So this April 1 will be your last opportunity to be part of a virtual meet and greet, probably until
later this fall.
Yeah, September-ish. And so let's make it a great one.
Yes. Come and join us. Sign up now.
But don't worry, if you miss this one, you're like, well, but I just want to talk to all these people. Well, we have a way for you to do that.
Don't worry. Yeah.
That would be our virtual community, which is full of nearly 300 people. We're actually really close to 300 people right now.
Woohoo!
I've been saying that for a little while, trying to drum up, but we're like really close now. So I wasn't lying. No. I was embellishing slightly.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's okay.
I mean, 250 is close to 300, but 275 is even closer, right? So anyway, this is full of amazing people.
I feel like you're splitting hairs in some ways, but it's awesome.
Geez, do you think I do that very often?
No. All right, well, never.
The whole point is the community is full of incredible people, like the people in our virtual meet and greets, but it is a couple bucks a month. It is $5 a month. You get to be in there all day, every day, supporting one another, being supported by other amazing people from all over the world. We have a men's group. We have a women's group. We have monthly Q&A calls. We have all sorts of stuff happening, and we also have people getting together in person all over the country. Please check it out. It is our favorite place to hang out on the internet, and we would love to have you join us. You can find out more information at normalizingnonmonogamy.com. Click on the community tab, and everything you could ever want and need to know about it will be there, or you can send us an email or a voicemail, and we will get back to you personally.
Yes. Also, while you're over there on our website, go to the resources tab and use the links for stdcheck.com. It is our favorite way to get tested for STIs. It is very fast and discreet and just a super simple way to know your sexual health status, which is super, super important. This is the same service that Finn and I use. I may have already said that, but we highly encourage you to check it out. By using the links on the resources tab, you get $10 off, making a 10-panel test only $129, and you support the show. So thank you very much for that as well.
Last but not least, please send us an email, send us a voicemail. We would love to hear from you. We'd love your feedback on the show, on the community, on these amazing world famous intros and outros.
Oh yeah, world famous.
On all of the things. We'd also love to have you, listener, come on the show. You don't have to be a therapist. You don't have to be a coach. You don't have to be a podcaster. You just have to be you. We love telling your story. That is the whole reason we started doing this. So please send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. We'd also love to hear from you if you have a question for our Ask Us Anything episodes.
Yes.
You can find out more about those on our website under the podcast tab as well. With that, let's go talk to Nikita, and we will see you all on the other side.
Let's go. Welcome to the podcast, Nikita. We're so excited to talk to you today. I'm excited to hear about your journey and about who you are. We would love for you to start by introducing yourself at whatever level you're comfortable with.
Absolutely. Thank you both for having me on the podcast, Emma and Finn. My name is Nikita Fernandez. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I'm a mental health therapist and sex therapist located in New York City. So I work virtually as well as in person. Our office is located in downtown Chinatown, and so feels good to be in the heart of New York doing the work I'm doing and supporting my communities. I tend to work with a lot of clients that hold identities that somewhat intersect with mine. So as a person of color, I see a lot of people of color, a lot of immigrants, also a lot of queer people and poly, kinky, sex positive sex workers. I love my job. I feel very privileged that I'm able to, you know, hold space for people's like intimate lives and their personal lives. And so it has been extremely fulfilling. So in addition to being a therapist, I also do a lot of community organizing in the city. And I currently do wellness programming for a platonic non-monogamous community called Open Social. I facilitate workshops, hold support groups for folks to come and talk about relationship struggles and a lot of other things. I do a lot.
I love it. I think it's amazing. We always love meeting other people who don't just do something themselves, but they want to help as many other people as possible. I think it sounds like you do it in your work, you do it in sort of maybe some volunteering aspects and also like community. We're hot on community, so we love to hear that as well.
Yeah, thank you so much. I was actually born and raised in India and lived there for 19 years before coming here. And so everything that I do is just inherently very community-based because it's in my blood, it's in my genetics. And I've been in the U.S. for about 7 years now. So it hasn't been too long, but I think the community comes naturally to me. It feels weird to be in such an individualistic culture and not have community. So I feel very lucky to have built the community I have.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm curious then as well, you talked about how your work intersects with a lot of your own personal, well, your personal identities, probably personal choices and trajectory. I'm curious for you, what is your relationship dynamic and ecosystem look like today?
Yeah, what a great question for a non-monogamy podcast.
It's almost like we planned that. I don't know.
Right, right now, my relationship structure, I'm a queer person, and so non-monogamy fits in very just even ethically with my worldview. And so at the moment, I don't have any hierarchy to my poly lifestyle. So I am a solo poly person, but I do have other partners that have relationship dynamics of their own and in their own hierarchies that I see very frequently. I date couples, I date people in polycules, and so I feel very lucky to have this rich connection of partners that, although have their own hierarchy of sorts, that I'm still able to be a part of their lives. But I am also like looking for my own, creating my own sort of hierarchy down the line. That just hasn't happened now because dating in New York is complex. And so there's only like so much I can do to meet other like single poly folks. I find that a lot of people come in with their partners, with hierarchies established. And so that is something that I've been navigating a lot with other solo poly and relationship anarchists and single folks that I've met.
Yeah. I love that. I would love to go back in time and figure out like how we got here, but I had a question about hierarchy while we're on it. And that is, it sounds like you're not opposed to hierarchy. It's not necessarily what you're doing today, and it's even maybe something you're looking for and you can blend in with, but it's not really what you're sort of doing today. I'm just curious because the hierarchy is one of those like hot button topic. I'm sure we could spend the next 3 hours talking about the nuances of hierarchy and making 50% of each side mad. So I'm just curious sort of what you're sort of your feelings and thoughts are on how that weaves into your world as it is today.
Absolutely. I think hierarchy is one of those things that could be either like prescriptive or descriptive. Mm-hmm. And so even if folks, you know, are choosing not to engage in hierarchy and have anchor partners versus primary partners, there is this sort of like prescribed hierarchy because of the society we live in and the way that the legal structure is set up. So, you know, having one partner you can add to your like health insurance benefits, or having like joint property together and getting tax write-offs. And so in a way, I feel like we're being forced to engage with hierarchy, even if we don't want to. And I think that's something that I struggle with just as like an immigrant. I'm not here on, you know, I'm not a US citizen. So being someone with a visa, I also have to take that into consideration. And so in a way, it feels like I'm almost forced to engage with it. But at the same time, hierarchy brings in this illusion of security, which is the more emotional side of it, that logically, I know that hierarchy doesn't weight safety, but emotionally that feels harder to disentangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like we could talk about this forever. As we said a minute ago, I appreciate you expanding on that a little bit. And I want to come back to the current.
Yeah. And I think we could weave it in too. I was kind of curious just how hierarchy looks for you and has shown up in your life. And I appreciate you touching on that a little bit. And I think too, there is even maybe, I don't know if less intense, but just the, let's say you live with somebody and you're partnered, you're nesting partners, there's a different level of communication that has to happen just by nature of doing the dance of living together. Maybe it's the dishes, the laundry, the I'm coming in and out of the apartment, you're there, where, how do we do that? And so even in a, like you said, a non-hierarchical partnership, there is hierarchy that works its way in regardless, just on a communication level. So yeah, I thought it was a really interesting conversation. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to go back in time and figure out when non-monogamy or alternative relationship structures kind of entered your life.
Yeah. I think about that question a lot because I grew up in a very conservative culture. You know, India, I think, is known just globally for having a very patriarchal, conservative religious culture. And so as growing up as a woman, I definitely wasn't given a lot of permission, either sexually or socially. And so there was almost this curbing of my identity. So when I came to the U.S. in 2016, 2017, it was actually at undergrad that I was exposed to this whole like palaemphra of alternative ways to live my life that were very outside of, you know, the options of what I was given back home in India. And so for me, I think non-monogamy emerged as a part of my queerness because I recognized that while I wanted to have partners of, while I have been more naturally like attracted to like cis men, I think coming into my queerness and being non-monogamous gave me the opportunity to engage with people of different gender identities. And so it almost felt like an extension of my queerness. But I would say that I fully came into my non-monogamous identity about a year and a half ago. So it hasn't been too long, but it also feels like it has always been a part of me. I just didn't have the room or the space for people around me to acknowledge it in me and hold space for that. And so I know there's a lot of conversation around non-monogamy being this relationship structure, but for me, it's an identity. It's my ethics. It's the way I navigate the world. Even if I didn't have a non-monogamous relationship structure, I would still identify as non-monogamous.
Yeah. I love that. I'm curious how, like you said, going back to not having a lot of permission or freedom to explore, it sounds like explore a whole lot of who you were growing up. And did that push your queerness sort of underground as well to where, you know, it wasn't maybe acknowledged by others, but was it even harder for you to acknowledge in that environment?
Yeah, I think it is because media representation has so many. I mean, we're looking at things through a heterosexual lens. And so what becomes familiar is what we're exposed to. So even though I wanted to engage in my queerness, I didn't know how, or I was more unfamiliar. And then it felt safer to pick what was familiar. And I find that that's something a lot of queer women have challenges with. And I say that from working with a lot of clients as well and having friends, that even if we are queer in some way, that sometimes dating men feels like almost like the most familiar or easiest way to go about it. And then we also look at dating apps and how, you know, the gender ratios are completely off. So I think a lot of things contribute to the partners that people pick for themselves.
Yeah. Did you have an inkling or the feeling, like did you have a knowing that you were queer growing up? Or was that sort of, like, it even got pushed down to the point where you didn't even recognize it because it wasn't really an option in your life. It's sort of in your worldview.
Yeah, I think a part of me always knew. Mm-hmm. I also went to a Catholic all-girls school, so
so maybe some confusion in there.
Yeah.
Some confusion, definitely. But also, it makes me think about friendship and where the line is between platonic and romantic, because sometimes I can have extremely romantic moments with friends. And so I think for me, going to an all-girls school and having those very intimate connections, it blurred a lot of the lines for me. But at the time, labeling it as friendship was the easiest thing to do because it was the most acceptable thing to do.
Yeah. In where you were at, in the culture you were in. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think, too, there's not a lot of models, even, let's say, in more open cultures, for a friend who is very intense and deep and intimate we, like, even in the U.S., right, and not to say that we're the most forward thinkers, because that is not true, but that is even a dynamic that is really not understood by anybody or really accepted. To say, like, I went out and had a really intimate dinner with my best friend, and they happen to be the same gender as me or a different gender, right? That it would immediately be like, well, then you're dating, there's romance, there's love, there's, instead of it being like, well, no, it's, I don't know, maybe, but it's gray. It's a gray area.
Yeah. It makes me think of relationship anarchy and just the validation of other relationships being as valuable as romantic relationships, I think is really important in building community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did it look like for you, you know, a year and a half ago? You said you sort of started to come into your own and really started to feel, maybe like feel like it was, you were coming into your own, as you said, but what was the path up to that point, and what happened about a year and a half ago that sort of helped you bring that forward in yourself?
Yeah, because it's been about, if I understand the timeline correctly, it's been about, as you know, four or five years up to that point that you were kind of, I'd imagine, exploring and kind of
waking up to the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I found the play and kink scene in New York back in 2021. I think that was my first gateway into alternative relationship styles, people feeling really liberated in their sexuality. And in these scenes in particular, being poly and non-monogamous is fairly common. And so I was actually starting to meet people and make friends with people that had very different relationship structures than anyone else that I'd met before the scene. And I think being exposed to that gave me more permission in a way to try it out myself. And so a year and a half ago, it was also back in grad school, studying to be a therapist, and was learning a lot of really good stuff around supporting people that had different marginalized identities. And I also had a professor who was a sex therapist that talked about, you know, that being a potential path forward in where I could go after graduation. So I think it all came together very nicely, because I found, you know, sex therapy is my calling. And in sex therapy, there's also a lot of training around working with folks that are non-monogamous. So I think it all came together in this really beautiful way, both professionally and personally.
Yeah. I love that. I'm curious. This is like one of my favorite questions is the moment you shift from the theory and
to the practice,
the learning about it, to like, I'm going to go to that first club, or I'm going to meet that first person or that first couple, or that shift from theory to reality is, I think, a really powerful moment. And I'm curious what that was for you.
Yeah, it makes me think about the value of lived experiences. And I think for me, you know, you can know all the theory, but if you have not been in these spaces or even attempting to understand, then you can only help so much. Mm-hmm. And I think something my clients really value about me is my lived experience in these spaces. And so when I'm working with them, I'm not always just using theory, but I'm bringing myself as a human being into the space, be it with, you know, a little self-disclosure if needed to build relationships. I'm bringing my identities, my experience with building community and exposure to different people within my communities that have different relationship styles. And I think ultimately that's what helps people heal, is knowing that they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It's tough to trust a pilot who's like, hey, I've read all the books on flying a plane, first time in the cockpit, so I think we'll be good. I read a lot of books. They're like, oh yeah, that's great. Yeah. So there's a big difference between I read about it and I've gone and done it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you mind expanding a little bit on that experience, kind of when you started and actually experiencing those things for yourself and how it went?
Yeah. It felt like stepping into this version of myself that has been in the making for a number of years. And at the same time, I was also becoming someone that I would probably have looked up to if I was younger and like knew someone like me. So it all happened just very serendipitously. I really like that word.
Mm-hmm.
It feels almost magical. But back at the time in 2021, I mean, we were coming out of, you know, the COVID lockdowns, and there was definitely a lot of nervousness around being in community spaces or being around a lot of people, not just because of COVID, but also because of being more isolated the previous year. And so in a way, stepping into the kink scene and these play spaces felt really empowering because I saw people feel really comfortable in their own bodies and just really enjoy pleasure. And I think that gave me permission to do the same. In many ways, it also helped me like fall back in love with my body, with the way I looked, healed a lot of body dysmorphia. It also gave me community of more queer folks and a lot more people of color as well that are ethically just more aligned with the values that I hold. And so it just gave me a different way of being.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounded like it surrounded you with community that I'm guessing it was this feedback loop of get a little permission, meet more people. They give me more permission. I open up a little bit more, which brings in more people that let me open up a little more. And it builds on itself like a snowball.
Exactly. And now I get to be that person giving other people permission. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so how did it go then from, you know, those first experiences back in 2021 and into the like the last year and a half?
Yeah, and just to
expand longer than that, like two years or so.
No, for sure. And I'm just to build on that. It sounds like, Nikita, those early experiences were play parties and kink parties that were sort of the gateway. Did I gather that right?
Yes, correct. Okay. That was right.
And so moving, I guess, from those experiences, yeah, how have the last few years been? And as you've said at the beginning, you know, you kind of come into this identity right now as solo poly. And has it looked like that the last few years? Kind of what has your journey been?
Yeah, it's definitely shifted a lot in the last few years, I'd say. So I found the lifestyle scene in 2021 and continued to go to events and meet people. And then briefly was in a monogamous relationship for a little while. So I sort of disappeared or took a break from the scene and then came back. So when I came back, I was in a different space because the space that I was previously in had people that were more more so people of color that were a lot older than I was. And then the space that I was coming into on my second time back into the scene was definitely people like a little closer to my age and also had a lot more white bodies, but the culture felt different in each of these play spaces. And so when I came in, it was a lot of just like volunteering and trying to build community in these spaces before, you know, feeling fully comfortable in asking to like put on workshops and give back to the community. And so I took my own time with going to these events and meeting people. And while I was doing these events, I also found this platonic community in New York called Open Social, specifically geared towards building non-monogamous community for folks. And what was really special about that was I hadn't previously found any place that focused on platonic intimacy. And joining that community gave me access to meeting a lot more people that also go to these other spaces. And so I started to have connections across different spaces and different groups that we shared communities in common or identities in common. And then it sort of became this network, which is something that it still is that way now for me. But I found Open Social. What's great about Open Social, I do want to shout them out because it's such a special space. We do like monthly dinners at people's houses where everyone brings like different food and it's potluck style. And then we do something called community circle where folks bring in different relationship challenges and we all sit in a circle and like validate and give like ideas. We do like weekend getaways. Some people host game nights or sometimes we like will go to a play party. So there's a lot of different options and also like community resources being shared. And I've just met so many folks that they all have such unique relationship structures, which is so cool to have access to, you know, people that live life in so many different ways and we can all come and learn from it. And so being an open social has been really important in my non-monogamy journey, especially as someone that, you know, has been single more time than I've been partnered. And so not having a primary partner to do this with it's a really different experience. And I don't often meet a lot of folks that are coming in without their partners. And so in a way, I feel like open social has been that partner for me. But instead of one person, it's a whole community of people. And so I volunteered my time to do wellness programming, which means that I get to facilitate workshops, bring in other folks to do workshops around navigating play spaces or working through jealousy or navigating relationship transitions. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna stop talking now.
No, I love it. I love the kind of correlation that you just made around having that community be your primary partner right now in this phase of life as you're exploring this. Like, how powerful is that, right? Like, not that there's anything, it's just a different experience, right? It's a different experience and it's an incredibly valuable one. And framing it in that way is, I don't know, just so powerful.
Yeah, I love that too. And I think we often hear from people in, I would say not a ton on the show, but within our community, and people reach out to us saying, well, this is really hard. I don't have a husband. I don't have a wife. I don't have this primary anchor partner. And it's really scary. Or I had that. And
I no longer do.
I no longer do. And now I have to go out and I want to keep doing this. I want to keep being relating in these ways, but it's way harder, way scarier on my own. And I think that's right. Not everybody experiences that. I can imagine there are some people like, this is way easier on my own. I don't have to worry about this. I don't have to worry about that. I can do it on my own. But for somebody who is saying like, this is hard, this is a challenge, seeking out a community like that, that is your sort of anchor to something outside of other relationships that kind of gives you strength and support is just so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel very fortunate. At the same time, though, it is still hard to be like someone without a partner or without, mm-hmm. you know, some sort of like anchor, primary partner. And so something I'm very passionate about is creating more spaces within non-monogamous communities for folks that don't have a hierarchy and folks that still feel isolated at events, because a lot of people come in with their partners and might stay partnered through the event. And so it's harder to, you know, try and read people's minds or find out, like, do these people just want to stay together? Should I go say hi? And so there's almost this like gap that needs to be bridged, because I feel like everyone wants to connect, but sometimes we're all just really nervous about what other people think or need about us coming over and saying hi. Mm-hmm.
So much. That experience of like being at a party, and this is something Emma and I used to do often. We would go to like a nightclub or a party and you would see people, and even just another couple was like hard to go approach, or worse was like a small group that had already made a circle and you like have to like break them apart and try to get in there. And so, and that was doing that as a team, right? We were working together to go up and have these conversations, even though it was often, hey, you should go talk to them. And we'd nudge each other and try to send one of us in as the sacrificial lamb. But I can just, I feel what you're saying, that you're doing that on your own, even if you have that supportive community that you can go back to, but they're probably not there with you going, okay, Nikita, we'll walk up to the group with you. Like, you still have to go and do so much of this on your own.
Yeah, definitely. I think it helps a little bit that, you know, I talk to people all day for a living. So I'm grateful for the communication and people skills that come naturally to me. But I do work with a lot of folks. And even when I'm putting on like workshops, I do a lot of workshops focused around navigating play spaces or sex positive spaces alone, even if you have a partner. So I recently actually did a workshop and I just spoke to, you know, the benefits of navigating spaces by yourself, because being alone, sometimes it's painted in such a negative, sad light. And so I wanted to highlight how it gives people a chance to figure out what they want without having a partner there, or it gives people the ability to feel empowered and wanted and desired, and that differentiation, which is so important in all relationships to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that second one, they're both amazing. I think the second one just dawned on me, that idea that, let's say somebody comes up and talks to us, right? It's quick for me to go, well, they're just here because Emma's hot, right? Versus like, if I'm there by myself, if they're talking to me, there's no other reason other than me. So I think that is a really important piece. I'm curious too, for yourself, what are maybe some of the other things that you've found that have been a benefit to you, maybe helped you? You said overcoming some body dysmorphia has been a part of your journey and a few other things, but I'm curious, as you've navigated this, you know, as a solo person, what are some of the other things you've taken away that have helped, that you feel have helped you, or maybe woven those in with the challenges that you've had to overcome and the sort of the triumph of that?
Yeah. I think something else that's been really big and powerful in all of this for me is recognizing that it's okay to be emotionally dysregulated sometimes, and accepting, really accepting that. You know, when I go to these events, yes, I'm going to feel good, but I'm also going to still feel lonely. I'm still going to feel sad. I'm still going to desire different kinds of experiences. And so doing my own work in therapy, with energy healing, with kink, to really feel connected to my body and accept that emotions will come and go has been a really big part of my journey. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you shared that, and like the connecting with your body and connecting with the emotions that arise. And I'm curious, like, kind of in the spaces, in the non-monogamy journey, I guess, how have you leaned into that? How have you embraced that part of yourself?
I think non-monogamy gives us so many chances to work on ourselves consistently. It triggers attachment wounds. And so I see that as an invitation to work with those parts of ourselves and, you know, have a conversation with them and reassure them that there's other ways to meet our needs rather than feeling threatened. And so really slowing down for me has been very instrumental in giving myself the time and space that I need to really sit with the challenges that non-monogamy can bring up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in many ways, it's also really affirming, because I'm not just getting attention from one person. So if there are times where I feel like undervalued or not as desired, I don't have as much evidence to prove that that's true, because I have other people in my life that really care about me and desire me and want me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe to build on that a little bit, some of the, I know we, not trying to focus on how hard it is and some of the maybe more negative feelings around it, but I think, you know, people often go, well, damn, it's a lot of work. This non-monogamy is a lot of work. And we're all nodding like, yep, it's a lot of work. But at what point, and for yourself, at what point, and how do you just enjoy it? Where in this journey, like, do you recharge and take, like, what keeps you going? if it's so much hard work, what keeps you going every day? And it, you said it's part of your identity. It's your ethics, who you are. But who you are is inevitably taking you on a path that is harder than if you were just like, well, I'm going to do the easy path.
I actually think monogamy is a lot harder. My opinion. I think it's so hard, like truly so hard. And what's worse is you can't really talk about all of it in public. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love for you to expand a little bit on that. If that's okay.
Yeah, I know. I would love to. So for a large part of my life, I have been uncoupled. I haven't had, you know, a lot of very longer term relationships. And when I was monogamous, that dictated my entire self-worth. I saw myself as, you know, incapable of being a valuable emotional partner to someone. I felt that I was always desired sexually, but not emotionally, which I think can be a very common experience for femmes, unfortunately. And so finding a monogamous partner became my end-all be-all. It was something that I felt obsessed with, something that, you know, really dictated the quality of my life. And engaging in the dating scene as a monogamous person was really hard because people don't really communicate. They're sort of doing non-monogamy, at least initially, before going monogamous. But there isn't really any, you know, any intimacy that's willing to be built. And that was really, really hard. And when I was in monogamous relationships, what I really struggled with was the fear that my partner would leave for someone else, which sounds really ironic because now I'm non-monogamous, but there was always a fear if there's someone better than me out there for them, that they don't want me. And my relationships didn't last very long. And so that sort of became like the evidence that I used. And after my last monogamous relationship, which was back in sometime in 2021, I decided that I wanted to have a different experience for myself and feel more empowered in my own dating life. And so non-monogamy became a way for me to engage with people and have different levels of connection without having to categorize them as either friends with benefits or monogamous partner, which I think in the monogamous dating scene, those are your two options of where you fall into when you're engaging with someone. And so starting to have different kinds of partners that offered me varying levels of connection and also varying levels of how available they were was a different experience for me because I no longer started to feel like I was just being sexualized. I started to hold space for the fact that, you know, people have different lives and I can have my own life and build different things for myself, even if I don't have a primary partner. And so if it's like a Tuesday night and one of my like partners wanted to hang out and I said no, that I could understand that if the roles were reversed and they said no, that it wasn't because I was undesirable or because they didn't want to spend time with me, but because they had their own life. And that was not a line of thought I could follow in my monogamous relationships. Things were so black or white. And I think non-monogamy has offered me a lot of gray. And what I like to say to my clients a lot is you can find so much compassion in the gray, but you have to let yourself see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I love that. That I think we often in monogamous relationships, and I will even say being non-monogamous, but having like a really deep anchor partner, for lack of a better way to describe it, right? It is easy to make assumptions, right? If I come to Emma on any random Tuesday night, I'm like, well, I can't wait to sit on the couch and watch a movie with you. And she's like, well, I maybe had something else planned for this evening, but I think we often assume we just default. We're going to do things together versus like, hey, what do you have going on tonight? Oh, well, I was thinking about doing this. Oh, well, I was thinking about doing something different. And there being space for us to say, well, you do your thing. I'm going to do my thing. we'll still come together, or maybe I'll see you tomorrow, right? Those, we have so many defaults in the world of, I think, relationships in general, but they really come to the forefront in monogamy because we can assume, right? I assume I'm going to get up, I'm going to go to work, I'm going to come home, and we're going to make some dinner, watch a movie, go to bed, get up and do it again the next day. And this way of living introduces a whole lot of other options for ways that you can take care of yourself and your partners can take care of themselves.
Yeah, for sure. And it makes me think about, you know, Esther Perel talks about this idea of how eroticism lies in our abilities to be differentiated from our relationships, that we can be individuals and come together. And it's in that coming together of two separate people that eroticism and desire lies in relationships. And that is something that I use a lot when I see folks in relationships that are either monogamous or non-monogamous, that sometimes over time lose their ability to connect intimately and end up not being able to have sex for a lot of years. And it's because there's almost this fusing of identities that they've lost themselves in the relationship and need some sort of anchor in themselves to rekindle that desire. So I think non-monogamy is a really powerful tool for that because it keeps people, you know, connected to themselves, but also their relationships. And I also think about the impact of living in a nuclear family system where folks are almost isolated with their partners, just politically, legally, in living situations. We have, like, you know, typically in a hetero world, a husband, wife, and kids, and there's no identity, there's no extended family, there's no community outside of that to come in and help people take a step back from being a parent, from being a partner, to actually give them the space to be themselves.
And to learn new parts of themselves that I think, you know, these are things that we've both experienced where we don't even know a thing exists in the world, that it's a possibility. And then you go and have a conversation, you meet somebody and they say, well, I do it like this. And your brain blows up in your head and you're like, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know that I could do this and this at the same time. I didn't know this even existed or whatever. And then that person can bring it back to, you know, that primary relationship, or maybe they just bring it back to themselves and say, wow, this is now a thing for me, or, hey, partner, you might think this is a cool thing, or, hey, friend, I think that what you said about being isolated sometimes in our monogamous partnerships or in any intense partnership, even if it's a non-monogamous one, it can be really easy to just get blinders and be very narrowly focused on what's right in front of you versus being able to bring in a lot of different experiences from around you, from meeting others and going out in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
It seems like that's something you did, and from the time of jumping into play parties and the kink scene, you started weaving in, as this kind of struck me, the more, let's say, focus on sex and pleasure, but then also bringing in a few years later the platonic intimacy. And so now you've sort of balanced those two. And I'm curious about that, just sort of the blend of that from those two, let's say, opposite sides of the spectrum, roughly speaking. I'm just broad brush painting there.
Yeah. I like the way that you conceptualize that. I hadn't thought about it previously, but it makes sense to me because I think a lot of folks tend to associate non-monogamy with something that's hyper-sexualized or something that is inherently just sexual in nature. And that is absolutely not true. And especially being someone that's, you know, a woman in the past, I've, again, been desired or been made to feel like the only thing I have to offer is my body and the value that I bring as a sexual being. And so having these platonic spaces and almost decentering sex for a moment brings in a lot of, like, like value that I feel as a human being and space for that emotional intimacy that isn't always associated with sex. And I think a lot of like asexual and demisexual folks really relate to this, that they want more community around non-monogamy or kink, but every space for the most part is so hypersexual that they want a space where they can just come in and not focus on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm curious for you how that, the blend of that space and the more sexualized space, how that those two came together to create the Nikita that we're talking to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they came together very beautifully and they go hand in hand for me, especially as someone that, you know, doesn't have an anchor primary partner, to have spaces for my emotional platonic connections and spaces for leaning more into my sexual self and centering on my the way I navigate the world as a sexual being. I think I very much need both of these spaces in order to do the kind of work that I do, because in a way it meets most of my needs, which is, you know, incredibly, incredibly amazing and convenient for me. But I know that for a lot of other folks, it's either finding one or the other. And so I'm curious about how we can bridge that gap for other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just curious. I'm going to switch directions just a little bit. Thank you for all of that. And I just appreciate you touching on the sexual spaces and the platonic spaces and how those are different but related for you, because and connected for you, because I think it's so common for people to just mush them together and or only find one, like especially mostly focusing on the sexual romantic play side of things, and then maybe missing out, like, where do I put this other part of me? Is that even allowed? How do I navigate that? So I just really appreciate this discussion around that distinction for you and how you've navigated that. I'm curious, you know, over the last year and a half, 2 years, as you've gone down this path, how open are you with people in your life about where you're at, and how has that gone?
Well, my parents definitely don't know. It's just, you know, just to start off with that. But I don't have a lot of family in the US. So a lot of my family is back home in India. And I think that gives me some space to be who I am. You know, literally thousands of miles away from my family. And so I'm lucky in that my chosen family is very aware of my identities. My clients are aware. It's something that I have on my public therapy profiles. That this is who I am. These are my identities. This is what I bring to the work. And I think people want to connect with other people that are, you know, feeling more comfortable and willing to be seen in their identities. And so in many ways, I'm very open and very fortunate to have spaces where I don't have to hide parts of myself. Mm-hmm. But I definitely, you know, have some family members that would not be supportive or would not be able to understand any of this. In fact, I recently went back to India to see my parents and was just consistently asked, like, when are you getting married? Did you find a boyfriend? These very hetero monogamy centered questions that were pretty painful to have to sit through and just regulate myself through. And so being back in the US in my community spaces, it's just a breath of fresh air that I can finally just be my authentic self.
Yeah, it's so hard to navigate that. It's so hard to hold, it sounds like from, you know, what you said, you just went back to visit your parents. So you have a connection with them. You have a relationship with them of some sort. However, which is important in some ways. However, it's not, you're not able to be authentically yourself. And that's so sad in a lot of ways. And yet, like, I'm so grateful you've cultivated the community and the chosen family that you have, because that's who your support is. And just, I guess I don't really have a point other than to comment on how difficult that is to navigate, to maintain that relationship with your family, but also, and but regulate yourself through it and recognize this is the, like, kind of, this is where the boundaries of this relationship are because this of the nature of the culture and people and where it's at. And I can show up and be there in that space within my own limits and being aware of those limits and then following through and then creating the support and the culture around you that is truly you. And mm-hmm. it's sad that you have to do that. However, I don't know. I just wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, I think there's so much grief that I will consistently have to process throughout my lifetime of not getting the support and the acceptance that I would love to have from, you know, really close family. But it's something that I actively am mourning every day because in order to have those relationships, I have to hide parts of myself. And I am lucky in that my parents are incredibly supportive of my career as a sex therapist. I talk about the work that I do with them, but there very much is this distinction between, okay, that's your professional life, but that's not you personally. So that's been said to me.
Yeah.
Just verbatim.
Wow.
Well, yeah. In some ways, maybe that's a baby step, I guess. Yeah. Still really hard, but it, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I love that you said that, Nikita, too, and just shared a bit about the grief that, mm-hmm. that you have to process all of the time, because you shared early, right, that you kind of always had a feeling or an inkling that you were queer. And then when you've really embraced the non-monogamous side of who you are, you laid that out as not just a choice or just a thing you do on the weekend. It is your values, your identity. And so now you have multiple layers of who you are that you have to figure out ways to honor and hide at the same time. And you can honor it and be fully yourself here and here and here. And I can't over here, but I can over here. And maybe I can be a queer woman of color here, but maybe I can only be a queer woman here. I have to try to, you know, put this part away. And so like, there's just the amount of juggling that you have to do every day just to be yourself is a lot.
Thank you for saying that, Finn. I definitely felt some heaviness at listening to that, and I really appreciate you acknowledging that. I feel very seen right now, so thank you.
Yeah, well, I will just offer that. The easy part is what I just – you get to do it every day, so I'm blown away. So I'm really grateful for you, Nikita, sharing your story and – just living it mm-hmm. so that and then taking it forth to be part of the different communities you are, the work you do and the people that you get to help. So I'm blown away and I'm grateful that we got to have this opportunity to talk today.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I would love for you to talk a little bit more about where people can find you and your involvement in the Something Positive for Positive People virtual conference coming up in a few months.
Absolutely. So I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast recording that I do a lot. And while my intention for 2024 is to slow down, I do have a lot of things coming up the first half of the year. You can find me at my website, which I recently launched, called healingwithnikita.com. So that's healingwithnikita.com. In addition to that, I also am doing a few workshops. So if you're in New York City, I would love to see you. There's an organization called Hit Me Up, which is known for the poly and kink events that they put on. And they do some really wonderful workshops around like different kink plays. And so I will be running a workshop called Navigating Subspace, Finding Liberation and Pleasure. And that's happening in New York City, downtown Manhattan on February 6th. In addition to that, I will also be presenting at my first conference this May, and I'm very, very excited to be speaking at a herpes conference. It is something that I'm very passionate about as someone that has HSV-1, and it is a topic that comes up very frequently in non-monogamy spaces because sexual health is very important. And so this will be a virtual conference that is, hopefully informative and giving different healthcare professionals and just any kind of professionals or people with herpes the information they need to navigate conversations around disclosure, how you can talk to your clients that you work with that might have herpes. And the theme of the conference, which is Sexual Health is Mental Health, is actually going to be the name of the talk that I give. And so it feels very important to talk about just the mental health implications of stigma that we face, even though, herpes is a very physical thing. There's a lot of mental health implications that often go ignored. And so feel free to come out to the conference. I love that it's virtual because that makes it accessible for folks around the country, around the world. Towards the end of it, we'll also be sharing results from the survey that Courtney has done. He has collected a lot of results about different people's experiences with herpes, and they plan on sharing the findings. So I think it could be really validating for folks to come hear that they're not alone in what their experience is if they have herpes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for all of that and explaining all of that. I'm excited for all of the work that you have coming up. And hopefully you can follow through a little bit and slow down in 2024. But the work is amazing. And I am just excited to send people your way. We will have links in the show notes to your website, to the conference, the virtual conference. And so people can find you very easily. Is there anything else today, Nikita, that you wanted to get out there in the world?
I guess I want to wish people, we're recording this on January 8th, so just wishing people a lot of slowness this year, like slowing down, being with your friends, being with your lovers, that capitalism takes a lot of our energy and we deserve to keep some of it for ourselves and for our communities. And so I do just invite people to reflect on the value that building communities can offer them, especially if they hold alternative identities that are not reflected back to us every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm curious if you're open to a follow-up question, what is something or some things that you're doing this year for yourself to do exactly that, to slow down, to stick middle fingers up towards capitalism, whatever it takes to do it. How are you doing that this year?
Well, having a 4-day work week is one of them. I love only working 4 days a week. I recognize the privilege I have in being able to have that. But saying no to things more often, spending time with friends, sleeping in. I like to get at least like 10 plus hours of sleep every night. I don't believe that 8 hours is, the minimum. In addition to that, just going to, different play spaces, engaging in different somatic forms of therapy. And I do consider kink a somatic form of therapy for myself. So allowing myself to follow my curiosity and resting and just spending time with friends in parks, doing nothing but playing board games sounds pretty perfect.
That does.
That sounds perfect to me.
Yeah, I was like, that sounds incredible.
Sitting in a park playing board games. Sign me up. But yeah. I'll lose a lot of sleep because that's my problem. I will play board games until there's no more time for sleep. So I have to figure out how to do
the
both.
The boundaries
around board games. I don't have self-control around board games. You know this.
I know. I'm very well aware.
Just one more round, right? Just one more round. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love it. Thank you, Nikita. And I'm just going to say it here as I say often. We'd love to have you back on. And I think you just threw out something that I would love to talk about more, which is your relationship to kink and how you view that as a healing somatic practice, because I think that is a really powerful thing that we have not talked about enough on the show. So we would love to make that happen as well.
Happy to do that.
Perfect.
Wonderful. I'm excited for that too.
And until then, we will let you go. Enjoy your day. And nobody knows this other than us, but your cat is needing some attention. It has been part of this interview for the last 40 minutes, and it's amazing. So we'll let you go take care of...
It made me smile this whole time.
Take care of your cat, and we will do this again soon. So thank you, and we'll see you at the conference in a couple of months.
Sounds good. Thank you both.
And we're back. Nailed it.
So perfect.
Thank you, Nikita, for everything that you shared today. It was so lovely to talk with you, and we're excited to get your work out there. And a quick reminder, links to everything that Nikita talked about, her work, as well as the Herpes Stigma Virtual Conference, are in the show notes. Go check them out, join the conference, and we would just highly encourage you to do that.
I don't think I could say it any better.
A quick reminder that our next virtual meet and greet is going to be on April 11th. You can sign up on our website, normalizingnonmonogamy.com, and mark your calendars now. So we can't wait to see you on April 11th.
You know, the cool thing is if you sign up for the meet and greet now, it gives you an opportunity to add it to your calendar, and then it marks your calendar for you.
It's just automatically there.
It's perfect. Yeah. Yes. Technology.
Yes.
Whiz bang. Boom.
Next week.
Beep, boop, beep, boop. Sorry.
Next week, we have an interview with Jules. This one's amazing as well. I mean, right? Like, I don't.
Cha.
I'm like.
Cha?
No spoilers. Just have to come.
Can I give a little spoiler?
Sure. A little one.
A little one?
A little one.
Let's just say it's a wonderful story of somebody who is non-monogamous but is intentionally choosing monogamy for the partnership that she is in.
Yes.
And it is a fantastic conversation about how that came to be.
Yep.
And with that, just one more shout out and thank you to Nikita, because I didn't do it earlier. I was too busy in awe of Emma's thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you all next week. Have a wonderful weekend. You got anything else?
Nope.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.